Drop it. Young Turks, power, power, power panel. Ben Mankiewicz, Cenk Uygur, Joe Sandberg, and John Iadarola. Not only that, everybody, welcome, first of all. How are you guys doing?
Good.
Good.
All right. Joe, you know in a couple different roles here at the Young Turks. He's founder of aspiration.com, which you should check out. But he's in the role here as one of the biggest progressive activists in California, helped to increase the earned income tax credit, which if you don't know, you should read up about it. And if you do, you'll probably run into Joe's work. And so, but we have more power, power, power later in this 2-hour show. We have special surprise guests. We're efforting it. We're going to try to make it work. There's some technical stuff we got to do, okay? But we are later in the show hoping to say surprise, okay? So hang around for that. That should be excellent and fun.
Cenk, scale of 1 to 10, how big is this surprise guest?
3.
Jesus is going to come into the studio. Yeah, it's going to be awesome.
Like, surprise, it's Ricky
Brett.
Strong.
Yeah, that's right.
Okay. The technical stuff is fixing his lower half.
Yeah.
his foot, that, his that, foot.
He has a broken leg.
His foot,
and stuff.
His foot.
Yes, yeah. That could be misinterpreted by the alt-right. Okay, which might be a story later in the program. All right, so lots of wild and woolly stuff, including the first story, which John's going to get to in a second, which has twists and turns. Lots of twists and turns in today's show. So without further ado, let's get started. John,
okay, let's do it. Michael Cohen is the former longtime personal lawyer to Donald Trump, and apparently he didn't just do law, he also did secret recordings, including in the months leading up to the 2016 election, in which he recorded a conversation with Donald Trump about payments they plan to make to a former Playboy model who alleges she had an affair with Donald Trump. And they wanted to pay her off so that she would not talk about it in the run-up to the election. The former model, Karen McDougal, says she began a nearly year-long affair with Trump in 2006, shortly after Trump's wife Melania gave birth to their son Barron. Ms. McDougal sold her story eventually for $150,000 to the National Enquirer, which was supportive of Trump during the final months of the presidential campaign. But the tabloids sat on the story, which kept it from becoming public. I guess they couldn't fit it. There's too much other news. And so they never ended up actually covering the story, which is too bad. It happens here sometimes too.
So the boy who was trapped in a refrigerator ate his own foot. And that story needed to be covered.
Yeah. It's timely. Okay.
Plus, aliens happened to land just that week.
That's right.
Exactly.
And the week after, and the week after. There's a definitive proof that they buried it a little bit later in this story.
Exactly. Now, access was granted to these recordings when the FBI raided Michael Cohen's office earlier this year. The lawyers in favor of, or the ones defending Michael Cohen, apparently shared it with Donald Trump's lawyers. Obviously, they did not cop to the presence of these until it was eventually released earlier today. But they have had access to it. We have been alerted to the fact that there are probably other tapes as well. Now, that doesn't mean that Donald Trump is willing to admit that anything bad happened. His other lawyers, the replacements for Michael Cohen, have come forward to talk about it. Rudy Giuliani, who is still technically his lawyer and not just the guy who goes on TV to get him in trouble every day, confirmed in a telephone conversation on Friday that Trump had discussed payments to Mrs. McDougal with Cohen in person on the recording. He said it was less than 2 minutes long, said Trump did not know he was being recorded and claimed that the president had done nothing wrong. And Rudy Giuliani specifically said nothing in that conversation suggests he had any knowledge of it in advance.
He said the tapes were exculpatory, in fact.
Yeah, exactly. I love the idea he didn't know about it in advance and the conversation was less than 2 minutes long, which means that they can really wrap these things up fast. Like, you alert me to the possibility that this woman is lying about an affair and I authorize a gigantic payment like that.
Right.
No big deal.
It's like, it's a great point, John. It's a fact, because it's like when in every movie that doesn't work narratively, where the cops get on the plane to fly from New York to Vegas to pick up the key suspect in the murder. They land, we see them get on the plane, then later we see them landing, getting off the plane, and one cop says to the other, "So where do you think he is?" And you're like, what did you people talk about for 5 hours on the plane?
So, yeah, let's break this down. First off, don't believe anything Rudy Giuliani says. He says, oh, it's exculpatory. No, it's not. Why do you think they're trying to get ahead of the story? It's explosive. That's why. Well, so, technically, he didn't say he knew about it ahead of time. Now, it might be that what Cohen says on the tapes, and we obviously don't have the content of the tapes here, but we have a lot of stories about people who did listen to them and then give these stories. So it's possible that in the tapes, Cohen calls Trump and says the payment by the owners of the National Enquirer has been made, right? So, and Trump goes, good, okay, and it gets wrapped up in 2 minutes. Mm-hmm. Now, Giuliani goes, see, he told him about it afterwards. To John and Ben's point, if you heard somebody called you randomly and said, hey, this woman you've never heard of that you might or might not have had an affair with, somebody else paid $150,000 to shut her up. Would you be like, oh, okay, that's interesting, I'll see you later, right? No, that means that's a thing you normally do. Good, I'm glad it was taken care of, right? This is so obvious, and I'm done trying to convince Trump people that, you know, like, oh, no, yeah, that's totally normal. Yeah, if somebody called me, I'd say $150,000 for an affair I might or might not have had, I could wrap that up in 2 minutes, right? Okay, all right, fine, you're a lunatic, I don't care to discuss that with you. Okay, for everybody else, it's super obvious what happened, okay? But there's two other parts of this that are monumentally important. One, Giuliani admitting it takes away the possibility of one other defense Trump could have done in court, which is attorney-client privilege. So it is either a failing of his, which is the first analysis that a lot of people did, or he's actually trying to hide the other story. So let me do the first one, okay? So a lot of people, as soon as Giuliani said that, a lot of lawyers and former prosecutors came out and said, why in the God's green earth would your own lawyer do that? That takes away your ability, in case you could, of saying attorney-client privilege. You want to reserve all your rights before going into court. Well, this is negligence.
Democrats have told us you hold your powder.
But in the case of the law, you actually should, yes, right? And so, and one theory was Cohen actually tricked them, that the courts had not already passed it on to the prosecutors, and that it was privileged, and Cohen leaked it, mm-hmm, thereby getting Giuliani and Trump to believe that the prosecutors had it. And so then Giuliani's like, oh yeah, it was fine, there's nothing wrong with that call. And it's like, boom, got you. So if that's the case, that's interesting and well played by Michael Cohen, who had to be advised by someone to
do that. Being advised by he's being advised by Lanny Davis.
Yeah, so by the way, that's in a quick aside. Another thing of like, has Michael Cohen flipped on Donald Trump? That's over. Lanny Davis is the most pro-Hillary lawyer and maybe person in the country. He's been with the Clintons his whole life. You do not hire Lanny Davis if you haven't flipped on Donald Trump. It's not a question. Anyone who thinks it's a question hasn't followed politics in the last couple of decades in America. Lanny Davis is, in essence, not only a lawyer, but a Democratic operative.
A Democratic operative loathed in many ways, even by establishment mainstream Democrats. He's such a conservative Democrat.
Yeah, but in the Clinton camp, clearly in the Clinton camp, mm-hmm, okay? I'm keeping it real, and you could hold out against them, but that's overwhelming evidence that Cohen with Trump anymore.
Davis said that this is the new Michael Cohen.
Yeah, you know? It's over. He flipped, in essence, right? So, okay, now the explosive part. All that is fun, that was actually an appetizer. So I had this theory when I read it, I was like, no, there's something wrong with this story. You don't get out ahead of a story like this unless you're trying to cover up something else. And then Ron Blitzer wrote about it as well on Law and Crime. And I was like, okay, good, I'm not the only one. And so it doesn't mean we're right, but they talk about the tapes. Everybody acknowledges the tapes. Okay, there's a tape of him talking about McDougal, the Playboy model.
I think I know what you're gonna say.
There's another Playboy model, Sarah Bouchard, who they claim had an affair with Broidy, the Republican financier of Donald Trump, and had an abortion. And they paid her not $150,000, $1.6 million. That's a whole nother level, like perhaps if you had an abortion. She did have an abortion. They came out, and just like in this story, Broidy raised his hand immediately. It was me, and you caught me. No, we didn't catch you. Why did you raise your hand? That was really weird, right? And it was not for the abortion. It definitely wasn't. I didn't, maybe she did, maybe she didn't. She did, but the $1.6 million was not for the abortion. So there has been an ongoing theory written by the New York Magazine and many others that
Broidy is fronting for Trump.
Yes, that Bouchard did not have the affair with Broidy. She had it with Trump, and And in fact, it was a way of paying for Trump's abortion.
And if Broidy did that, did he receive anything for that?
And if he did, that is a massive crime.
Yeah.
Okay.
And but we know that the contracts, the defense contracts that his company got went from
huge.
Like I don't have the numbers in front of me, but on this scale, $80 in contracts to $627 million in contracts that he's gotten since Donald Trump came in.
Yeah, so that's a long story, and I've talked about it on the show before. He gets contracts for the United Arab Emirates for over $600 million. Donald Trump does favors for the United Arab Emirates and is opposed to Qatar, which is what they wanted.
Huge switch in American policy without explanation. Yeah.
Yes, and then finally, that's why when Giuliani comes out and goes, yeah, the McDougal tapes, yeah, that McDougal. So, yeah, man, we did that one. Oh, did I say that out loud? McDougal, though. Remember, everybody, McDougal, not Bashar.
And also the sources saying that they, and in regard to those other tapes, that the other tapes are with Cohen and people of significance and consequence. That was the quote used by the source. So, people of significance and consequence.
You made an interesting point earlier about nothing can divorce Trump supporters from Trump. And in a sense, this is just going to make them feel more enthusiastic because there's a religious component to it. And I'm not talking about the missionary position. The religious component is this idea held by Trump supporters that God works through the most unlikely characters, right? So the worse Trump is, the more immoral he is. To this group of supporters, the more it affirms the magic of God's power working through this incredibly unlikely character.
How do you reason with people who don't use reason? Yeah. So because if you said that, okay, well then Clinton's immorality, which you said was the worst thing in the world, should be God working in mysterious ways and showing his magic. No, that's immoral. Trump doing something way worse, God's magic.
Well, Obama, they said, was literally the Antichrist. Wouldn't that be the ultimate way for God to work? Through the Antichrist?
Setting the stage for Trump.
Maybe.
Who sets the stage for Bernie Sanders? What?
Okay, so I have a question for the panel, but first, like two little wrinkles. Just in terms of what they've claimed before, the campaign was reached out to by the Wall Street Journal right before the election back in 2016 and asked about those payments because the Wall Street Journal had found out that something had happened. Hopick said, we have no knowledge of any of this and said that Ms. McDougal's claim of an affair was totally untrue. Well, we don't have proof of the affair just yet, but they clearly did know about it, and so they have been lying about that. That was ongoing for a couple of years at this point. And I just think this is funny. In reaction to the story today, apparently the president said, I can't believe Michael would do this to me.
Yeah, I can't believe
Michael. Or with me, technically. Mm. That's a weird way to say that. But so my question, though, is there are ways that theoretically that crimes could have been committed. So there's the legal and the ethical aspects, which are sort of separate. This is explosive, but how likely is this in either of those two areas to actually matter more than a week into the future?
So to Joe's earlier point, people are just set in their ways. We're done with it, right? So the Republic, 80% of Republicans will not move no matter what. And even if it turns out the Bashar story is true, and Trump paid for an abortion, they're like, oh, God works in mysterious ways. And of course, the guy who's the most immoral person on the planet, according to our own ideology, is the one that he would choose to be our leader.
Right,
but they'll believe it. They'll believe it. So, but progressives already hate Trump.
But hold on, just real quick, just 10 seconds. But the second component to that story, if that story is true, that then Broidy, is that how we say his name? That then he was given favors and defense contracts for stepping up and taking that payment. And he's been the middleman in these deals before. That's a crime that everyone understands. That will make it that one would make it tricky for Lanny Davis, for Lindsey Graham.
Mm. Yeah. And so, but that's a great point by Ben. Look, the Republican voters will not move. I give you an example we talked about on the show before. Scott DeJarlais, he's in Tennessee. DeJarlais is a congressman. Turns out he paid for three abortions, not one, not two, three. Two with his wife, I believe, and one with his mistress, or two with his mistress, one with his wife. It's hard to keep up with all the abortions that he has paid for. And the voters are like, God works in mysterious ways. Who cares? We don't care about abortion. We're just lying. We're just kidding. I just hate immigrants. I don't care. So will they care about Donald Trump's abortion? No, the voters will not care at all. They never cared. It was always a lie, right? The politicians, well, okay, maybe they have to make some uncomfortable sentences like, oh, I'm very opposed to abortion but love Donald Trump. They could walk that tight line. They've been doing it for 2 years now. But okay, here it is. Here's a $1.6 million payoff. If, okay, $1.6 million payoff. Are the Republicans going to go, yeah, I don't care. I don't care. It's obviously illegal. This guy's an obvious criminal. But I'll lose my primary. I vote with
Donald
Trump.
I'll tell you one thing.
I don't know.
I literally don't know.
If something like that turns out to be true, Jeff Flake is going to take to Twitter. He's going to be pretty angry.
For an hour.
Yeah,
I think they'll be perfectly fine with that. I mean, they got past Monday.
Well, that's a real. I'm just saying that we are entering into an area where the potential, no more than a potential, where there are serious, unambiguous crimes, right? I mean, a big part, as you know, Cenk, you're a lawyer, like a lot of, you know, you kill somebody, that's a crime, right? But a lot of these crimes are, no, that's not a crime. My intent was this, and then you argue it, and that's why we have a. That's why there's no. We may end and. Enter into unambiguous territory, and that will put a different kind of pressure on Republicans. And as always, as we get closer to Election Day, you know, if they feel like there's an advantage to separate themselves from him, then they will separate themselves from him.
And by the way, don't get me wrong, I think they will. I think that Trump is a disaster, but also from a management perspective. And I would be really surprised if the markets didn't tumble at some point because of the tariffs or the overinflated stock market because of the insane tax cuts, etc. And the minute the markets suffer, the donors will flip, which will make the Republican politicians flip. But that's your only hope, not like that they develop a conscience or that the Republican voters care.
And it's a hope that would be absolutely devastating for the vast majority of America.
But there is some percentage of that 80%, make up a number, that's persuadable. Give me a number. 3%. I was going to go with 8, but we'll take 6.
Okay, all right.
6%.
Deal.
And there's a whole giant swath of Democratic operatives who will run an entire campaign on the off chance that they can get that 4.5%.
Instead of running on.
Instead of just being like, you know, there's 60% of the other people, let's just get them.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Instead of running on corruption, which is another story in the news today, it turns out we were right about that all along, number one campaign issue. I've been telling you that for 7 straight years. Anyway, and number 2 is, I love this phrasing that Ocasio-Cortez used, economic dignity. You run on that and you will crush these guys. Yeah. So Trump is a monster of a different sort, and there are legal proceedings and investigators. Let them do their job, okay? To me, that's a separate issue, okay? Well, but when you're running a campaign, run to actually help Americans.
Yeah. Why don't we take our first break? When we come back, I think it's time for a reappearance of the TYT Supreme Court.
Interesting. Okay, Supreme Court on its way. All right, back on the Young Turks. We did not plant this, I want you to know this. It's Shelby tweets, Cenk, I have a checking account and 2 investment accounts with Aspiration. It's been great.
Thank you.
That is not the point, but thank you, though.
All right, you just made my day. Thank you.
All right. Now let's go to YouTube Super Chat. Brendan Weinkoop says, National Prison Strike 2018. Prisoners have called for a nationwide strike and protest from August 21st to September 9th of 2018. It's going to be lit. Hashtag prison strike. It shouldn't be literally lit, though. Okay, just let's be careful. Having said that, look, the way we treat our prisoners in this country is barbaric and unconstitutional. Solitary confinement for as long as we use it is insane, and it's definitely cruel and unusual punishment.
Yeah.
I talked to a woman on Rebel headquarters that had gone to Yale, got arrested for reasons she's still disputing, etc. And they just throw people in solitary confinement left and right for 3 weeks at a time, which used to be absolute torture. They don't even think twice about it. Oh, you looked at me kind of weird. 3 weeks of solitary confinement where you can go ahead and lose your mind.
Right? When those kids got caught in that cave, part of the reason so many people focused on it was that they were mostly alone for a while. And we just throw people in, cut them totally off.
That's right. They had each other. And with solitary, obviously, you have no one. Okay, last one. Robert Erickson, first of all, sends in 100 Swedish kroner. So we're back. We're back to the kroners. Thank you, Robert. He says, as a Swede, it's interesting to note that Ben is more upset about the lack of presence of Meryl Streep in the ABBA musical Mamma Mia, here we go again, than about Trump paying former Playboy models.
I thought she was in that.
I can't say. I don't want to spoil it for people. But there's a giant
lie
in the movie. I don't know that he has gauged my sentiments correctly.
Okay. Was there a What the Flick review or something?
We reviewed it, and a lot of people like this movie, and she's Meryl Streep, and it's the sequel, and she's in the thing, and she's at the top of the cast, and...
Okay, I got you. Everybody check out all those What the Flick reviews online. I'm thinking about seeing Eighth Grade or the Mr.
Oh, it's so good.
I know.
The best.
So I'm going to check the review out first. All right, John, what's next?
Okay, let's have a little fun. Most people seem to agree that the Trump-Putin summit did not go particularly well politically for Donald Trump. And in a lot of ways, the days since then have been worse with him reversing on what he had said at the summit and then undercutting it and then going back and forth and back and forth and then offering to hand over some of our ex-diplomats to Russia and then deciding he's not going to do that and then saying, well, maybe we'll have Putin here and then God only knows where we're at with that. It's been sort of a mess, and it was perhaps capped off earlier this morning when we found out that tapes of him discussing, you know, payments to this Playboy model who claims that she had an affair with him have actually been released, that the FBI has it. So it has been a rough, rough week. But I want to ask a specific question with the return of the TYT Supreme Court. Drop it.
Yeah, there's no way.
Certain that he did actually have it ready in time. He just wanted me to look awkward. No, he's a professional. He had it ready to go. Anyway, so the question for the Supreme Court is, has this been the worst week politically for Donald Trump in his presidency? Mm-hmm.
Good one.
Now, I want to lay out a little bit more information. So I gave you some of the reasons why many people are saying that this has perhaps hurt him in a way that most other weeks haven't, no matter how bad the news has been. Obviously, he's done terrible things, but his base generally doesn't care. A lot of people have tuned out. But I want to read just a couple of numbers that could play into your reaction to this. So in terms of the summit performance, 55% of the people surveyed recently were unhappy with his performance, while 32% approved. So you might say, overall, I mean, that's not good. You certainly don't want that coming out of a big international event that he had been hyping. However, 68% of Republicans did approve of it, with only 21% saying that they disapproved. And this isn't really specifically attached to it, but in terms of the willingness of some people to never, ever shift on a position, this is one of the most amazing stats that I've seen recently. 31% of Republicans strongly disagree that Russia got involved in the 2016 election on behalf of Trump, with another 19% somewhat disagreeing. One third of Republicans, after all of this, in a recent poll, still say, nope, it didn't happen. 2% of Democrats felt the same way.
We saw this at the run up to the Iraq War, and Rob Reiner's movie, Shock and Awe, touches on a little bit. But, you know, we talked up, and I don't have the dates off the top of my head, but I mean, it might still be that 40% of Americans believe that Saddam Hussein had something to do with 9/11. Mm. I mean, the power of sort of a endlessly well-weaved piece of propaganda, a lie, can be very effective. Also, it made sense why else would we be going into Iraq if he didn't have something to do with 9/11? So we've said this before, and we're not that bright. Overall, we're not. We're easily swayed by hard propaganda and by soft propaganda, and that's because it works. It's worked over time. It's worked. It works. That it's effective.
Yeah. So two things about that. In terms of the numbers, only 31% of Republicans are sure that that Russia did not interfere. I'm surprised that number's that low. Right now,
really?
Mind you,
another 19% say they're somewhat sure.
Yeah.
It didn't
so
happen.
About
50%.
So about half. Right. Even that is low. So like. Don't get me wrong, every Republican politician in the country minus Trump says, yes, the Russians definitely interfered. Every intelligence official says it.
Except for Rohrabacher.
Okay. And you're right. There's like three or four left congressmen who are still left going, no, Trump, Russia. No, Russia's great. I don't know what you're talking about. Russia's the best friend we have. Mm-hmm. They would never do that to us besides Putin said so, right? And even Trump has admitted after saying a thousand times they had nothing to do with it. Yeah, okay, so look, they did. And I've always said that they meddled, right? He even put out a videotape of a couple of times where he said it. So how could it be that nearly half of Republicans, because Ben's right, yeah. Propaganda works. Because Trump says they did it three times, says they didn't do it a thousand times. Mm-hmm. And we're in our camps, and it's amazing how well lies work You just have to have one camp's leader repeat the lie 1,000 times. But it's an uneven playing field because one side lies and lies on purpose. The other side doesn't even make its own case, let alone lying.
Yeah,
right?
and to, for those who think that that we and other people on this panel have been hoodwinked by propaganda, by anti-Russia propaganda and Trump derangement syndrome, you know, for the Iraq war lies, those lies and the lies to the extent that many in the intelligence community were behind it, many in the intelligence community, we now were screaming no, 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 and they were overruled by their bosses. One, there are no leaks here. Right, there's nobody inside. There's no CIA agent who goes, no, they're not lying. You know, they're not telling the truth. John Brennan is lying on this. He lied on the other thing, right? You know, and it serves the people in power. It's that lie served the people in power in the Bush administration, right? That piece of propaganda. This lie is literally challenging the people in power. That is enough reason all by itself to understand that we're that the on Russia. This is not a piece of propaganda.
So, but really, really fast. So, I definitely think this conversation is interesting. But I am also, in terms of the Supreme Court,
can I rule first?
You certainly can. Has this week been worse politically?
Judge Sandberg rules as follows.
please, Justice Sandberg.
Justice Sandberg. Thank you.
Right.
Thank
the Supreme
Court. No mere judge.
Tell you to go to law school. it was not President Trump's worst week politically. Mm. His worst week politically was around healthcare. This might have been his worst week legally, ultimately, because it could be public evidence of treason. But for better or for worse, what voters respond to, and I think that's what informs the question of whether it's the worst week politically, is this question of whether President Trump is on your side. And I think that in his presidency, the moment when it was clearest that President Trump is absolutely not on anyone's side but big business and pharmaceutical companies was during the healthcare situation.
Yeah, so I'll give my cute answer first and then kind of my real answer. The cutesy answer is his worst week was the week that he passed the tax cuts. And that's what they think was his best week. That's conventional wisdom. But the reality is catching up with them in terms of the voters. It's now down to only 1/3 popularity because the people are still, where is it? Where's the guy? I thought it was going to come to me. And they're beginning to realize, no, it just went to the rich, just like we told you, and they're starting to get more and more angry. But worse than that is that it has created a bubble in the stock market, period. No question about it. And bubbles burst. And when it burst, that's when Trump gets kicked out by his fellow Republicans. Now, having said that, and that is substantively probably the correct answer, but in terms of Republicans beginning to turn the maelstrom, and it has been one maelstrom after another after another. But the tariffs were last week, and it was already like the Republicans, none of the Republican donors agree with Trump on the tariffs. So they, all the Republicans who had always been like, yes, sir, absolutely, sir, on Donald Trump, the one set of people they care about more than Trump is their donors. So when the donors were like, tell them to shut up about the tariffs, all of a sudden, even Orrin Hatch and everybody was like, ah, screw Trump. He doesn't know what he's talking about, right? And then this week, this thing lands like a bombshell when he goes and kisses Putin's ass. And the Lindsey Grahams of the world are like, no, no, no. Every Republican that's actually has like just 1% of a conscience about what have we been saying our whole lives, our whole lives. I cannot turn around in 1 week and now tell you that Vladimir Putin's a really good guy and a saint and he's got America's best interests and we should believe him above our own intelligence community. No, no, I can't. So that's two strikes in a row. And then these tapes are coming out and these tapes are going to be disastrous. So, and in a sense, every week is the worst week. Like it keeps getting worse and worse and worse. So in the end, okay, fine, I'll vote this week.
Interesting.
Are you done?
He's the Chief Justice.
Yeah, we have to finish this week, actually.
Yeah, Jesus, is there any time left for Justice Bank? You know, you read that poll, and I'm never wearing my contact lenses again, by the way. Your poll was 32% approved, 55% disapproved.
That sounds right.
Another poll had it 40 and 56. But a HuffPost YouGov survey had it 40% approving and 36 disapproving. If there was if the question were worded in a way to allow for more people to say, "Nah, I don't really know, I wasn't following the news," then Trump does better. And of course, his people are going to hang their hat on that poll, right? I'll get that later. That said, I think it was his worst week because of the last point that Cenk made. Sort of this was the first time, even though Lindsey Graham the next day, when Trump apologized, we're like, take the president at his word that he misspoke. A lot of people talk that way. It's kind of language people use all the time. They say would when they meant would not. They're always using triple, quadruple, quintuple, sextuple negatives. That's a regular way of speaking. It's not a big deal. There was a fissure in Republicans, and the fact that only 68% are buying, 68% of Republicans approved of his handling of the summit, that's not a good number for him. Mm-hmm. He likes those numbers in the 80s. So I will say politically it's his worst week. It wasn't his worst week as a person. It was like his one of his best weeks as a person. Politically it was bad.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think I agree with you. Every week is just so terrible. Like we do on the Damage Report, at the end of each week, we look back and just say, what's all the crazy stuff that happened? And even that, like it's too much. You can't remember it even if you try to. You remember he had people around him that supposedly were reining in his worst instincts and stopping him from being really crazy. And then those people steadily left, and we said at the time, like, what if like he actually goes insane? I think this week might have been a demonstration of that.
Let me ask you guys one quick question. So with my closest friend, I don't want to mention his name, Dan Hamilton, right? Mm-hmm. And so he and I made a bet at the beginning of the Trump presidency, $20 per person. Like per people he names as his closest advisors in his cabinet. He said there will be as many standard, awful, but establishment Republicans who will turn him back to a course that doesn't go off the tracks. And I said, no, he's going to surround himself with incompetence and crazies. And how much money, just roundly, do you think I am owed at this point?
$480.
It's overwhelming. Like he gets General Mattis.
Yeah.
And then I'm kind of stuck after that.
Yeah. So look, I wonder, does he recover from this? I don't know. I mean, look, the Republican opposition to him was somewhat vocal. Like I don't think we've really reached this much vocal opposition since the Hollywood Reporter tapes. But how much action has there actually been? I mean, they were going to block
when those Hollywood Reporter tapes come out, when people hear them, that will sink him.
That will totally sink him. Yeah. So, but I do wonder if he'll be able to sort of get it back together. I mean, he looked pretty ridiculous. But that said, I don't know. I want to say that politically in the short term, I mean, the Democratic congressional advantage had been really big. And then it started to dip a few months ago.
That's right.
And it did go back up. And when it went back up was when the family separation policy was unveiled.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That, in terms of political weakness going into the midterms, was a huge turning point.
I'm not sure that's right. I'm not sure I agree with you.
No?
I'm not sure that we could chart that dip to that turnaround. Mm-hmm. That outraged us. It should outrage all people with some
common sense. A lot of protests around the country, like 700.
Yes, but also a message to his voters. I mean, that was deliberate. That was, hey man, immigration, get motivated. This is our stand. This is our line in the ground. Yeah. So I think that they liked that. Mm-hmm. And I just don't know. I'd love to see proof that that's when it.
Two-thirds of the country apparently was against that policy. That's still scary. But that said, I do think that this was pretty chaotic. I think that it might have slightly emboldened some of his critics to think we can criticize him, and as long as we don't have a primary right now, it won't actually sink our careers. And also, I kind of want to be a little bit hopeful and assume that we're on the upswing. So
right.
I think that politically, this has been very damaging him, and I would say that at this point, it's probably worse politically for him out of his presidency.
Let me get one point in support of my dissenting opinion.
Mm-hmm. Strong dissent
from Justice Sandberg that I'd posed to the panel. If you had one issue, one only issue, to run against Trump in the midterms, would it be what happened this week with Russia? Because
of course not.
So if that's not the one issue you'd pick, then doesn't that weaken the case that it was his worst political week?
No, it's a great, great point. But I'm going to say no, and I'll tell you why. Although John almost got me to vote against him, and it changed my vote. because you made a good point too, John, about the child separation, which was really damaging, right? That's certainly up there for one of his worst weeks. But Joe, the reason why I disagree is not because you're not right about what you run on. You run on policy. You're 100% right on that. And so at the end of the day, we're not going to run on this. But the way to undermine Trump is not to keep calling him a monster. Mm. We all, or the whole country knows it. Mm. It's what Democrats are missing, because they live in their own bubble, is some people don't mind. They want a monster, right? So they keep reinforcing a thing that's a positive for them. Mm. Like, no, you don't understand. He really hates immigrants. They're like, yeah, that's, so do I, right? Yeah, so, right. But for the first time, and this is what put me over the top.
Cenk is going to say something that I'm 100% going to agree with. I know you're going to say.
Fascinating. Let's see if it's true. Okay, for the first time, he started to seem weak. Was that it?
He looked stupid. He looked bad. He looked terrible.
His body language was.
He was a goofball. He was an undeniable goofball, even to people who are instinctively sort of like
him. He was George W. Bushian.
And he was standing next to a guy who actually is strong.
That's right.
I don't like his strength. I think it's monstrous, but he is strong. Mm. And juxtaposed to Putin, even if they deny it, that seed got planted in Republican and independent heads. Maybe he's not strong. Maybe he's a weakling. Mm. You know, and all you need to do is, you know, once he has a real alpha male in the room or whatever, he cowers.
Maybe he's a joke.
Right. Maybe he's a joke. Yeah, right. Exactly. That's why I did 100 loser Donald segments before the election, because that's how you have to attack him, not, hey, he's a bad guy. We all already know that. Hillary had the 100% wrong strategy. If you convince them that Donald Trump is weak, he's done for. He's got nothing left. Mm. That's why this was the worst week.
That's 3-1.
Mm. All right. Well, we have a ruling, but it was strong nonetheless, Joe.
Thanks. Yes. It'll be noted historically.
All right, we got to take a quick break. We still have the big surprise coming up for you guys in today's show. And then liberals doing wrong things, in my opinion. So we'll debate that as well when we come up. All right, back on the Young Turks. Real quick here, two comments. One is from Twitter. Eclectic Miscellaneous says, I think the correct answer to which week has been the worst week for Donald Trump's presidency is yes. That's funny. Victor Tentukfui writes in on YouTube Super Chat, and I swear to God we're not planting these. Love the show, love my aspiration account.
Thank you.
And this is a double whammy. Can we get True North on TYT site or on YouTube since Go90 is now shutting down?
That would be awesome.
So look, just still you can find True North out there, go and watch it, etc., and all the places that it is, including obviously Verizon Go 90, and they were a wonderful partner to us. We'll work on the rest later, but don't, like, that's later, okay? So just go find it now. It's a wonderful series.
The important thing is to,
yeah, that's what I'm getting to. So look, there's Streamies nominations going on right now, and you guys can nominate, and if that makes a huge difference, and there's a lot more of you. And if you guys do that, it might be up for a Streamy, which would be super cool. So we got a bunch of things that are up for Streamies. You can go to streamies.org/fans to vote. But what you do is you type in the name of the show, and then you select the category. So let me quickly tell you what they are. Young Turks for News. And there's the TYT.com links to it, too, if you want to do it that way instead of the bottom one, which is streamies.org/fans. But you type in Young Turks, and then you select the news category. You type in True North, that's John's excellent series about the North Pole. And you choose the documentary category. You type in The Breakdown, and you choose pop culture category. And then Murder with Friends, and choose nonfiction series. If we get nominated for all four of these, it would be amazing. And then we have an excellent chance of winning, again, thanks to you guys. So let's go make that happen. Thank you, guys. All right, next topic.
Okay, let's do it. Yesterday, we thought we were on the brink of a showdown between two different groups outside of Congresswoman Maxine Waters' office. Now, what we expected were that the right-wing Oath Keepers organization was going to be there attempting to intimidate the Congresswoman, bringing guns and all of that. And it was likely that counter-protesters would come out to protest against them. And we know how that has gone in a number of different instances in the US. A little bit worrisome. Didn't actually happen, though. But the protest, which was announced earlier this week, was, this is their language, by the way, the Oath Keepers. It was against Maxine Waters' incitement of terrorism.
Lies.
And a stand for ICE and the Border Patrol as they enforce the perfectly constitutional immigration and naturalization laws of this nation, which Trump is ignoring in a number of cases. That's what they put on their website, by the way. That's the SPLC. Authorities had been in contact with the group, apparently, though, and it was decided that they would not come in order to ensure peace. That said, just in case it still happened, counter-protesters did still show up. They gathered by the dozens and remained long after the Oath Keepers had apparently bailed on their original promise to appear at the office. Now, at one point, someone did take a flag off of a pickup truck, doused it in oil, and set it on fire, chanting, "America was never great." So that part of it is unfortunate, of course. But at least the potential fight between these two groups did not happen. And Maxine Waters herself had been worried that that was a possible outcome. She had warned people not to counter protest, actually. She said that Oath Keepers would like nothing more than to inflame racial tensions and create an explosive conflict in our community.
Can I say three things real quick? First of all, hashtag abolish ICE. Second thing is hashtag abolish ICE. And the third thing I'd like to say is hashtag abolish ICE.
At least that does not lack clarity. Okay, so I have a number of different opinions on this. So first of all, Oath Keepers are disastrous. They carry weapons around with them and come in camouflage. And so when they start saying Maxine Waters is enabling terrorism and I'm going to come with my weapon, that's a recipe for disaster. Mm. So thank God they didn't show up. And I agree with Maxine Waters that I would not want counter protesters there. So now, as it turns out, Oath Keepers didn't show up anyway. But thank God for that, because if they had, with the, clearly some of the counter protesters had, were in a frenzied state. Okay, in my opinion, if they had met the Oath Keepers in a frenzied state, and one side has gasoline with them and the other side has weapons with them, it's only a matter of time before something like this explodes. So don't do it. Don't do it. And if some lunatic right wingers are going, whether they've got guns or don't, take them. Look, outside of Charlottesville, and yes, Charlottesville was shocking that there was appeared to be a couple hundred of them there. But almost every other right wing protest is 17 people. Just let them be goofballs by themselves, march around like jackasses, and go home. Okay. So now the third thing is really important. This, I don't know who did this. We in fact called some of the unions that were present. They're like, we did not participate in that part, right? And because I'm trying to figure out who the hell did it, because ripping the American flag, first of all, from somebody's truck, private property, terrible, and could lead to violence if that person then wants their property back, and it's wrong and it's illegal, etc. Saying F the government, America was never great. Okay, I don't agree with that, and I know that at this point there's a lot of rage on the left as well because of all the suppression, oppression, etc. for this long, and you want to have legitimate conversations about the things that America has done wrong throughout history? Are you kidding me? That laundry list is enormous. On the other hand, America has also done wonderful things throughout history, and I would hope that smart people have a conversation about both of those things, right? But the part that really I object to is burning the flag and then this quote. One of them said, "This is not the American flag, this is their flag." No, exact opposite. No, the American flag is our flag. It's our flag. It stands for all the things that we believe in, equality for all, the things that are in the Constitution, freedom of the press, freedom of speech, human rights, civil rights. It stands for all those things. Now, did we always live up to that? No, but that's why we fight, so that we can live up to those principles. So those are our principles. The right wing doesn't own those principles. The right wing hates those principles. Look at what they're doing now. They have an authoritarian leader going around the world kissing up to other authoritarian leaders. They never believed in our democracy. They never believed in freedom of the press or speech. They never believed in any of the Constitution. That's our Constitution, our flag. You should fight for it instead of against it.
Mm. And it's so important that we maintain nonviolent civil disobedience.
Yes.
There's just overwhelming evidence over the history of our country and movements for justice throughout the world that civil disobedience and resistance works specifically when it's nonviolent and passive, because in those ways we maintain the moral high ground.
Yeah. And you're not going to outviolent the right wing, okay? And right now they have the government in their control. You're not going to outviolent state violence. It's a terrible idea, both on morality and on effectiveness.
I'm not dubious about the story. I'm curious. There are going to be some more details about the story. The details are incredibly sketchy right now.
Yeah.
The Supreme Court has thankfully upheld it. You have the right to burn an American flag. You should unquestionably have that right to burn an American flag. Mm-hmm. But everyone who burns an American flag in America looks like an idiot. And we talked earlier in this hour about propaganda, and already this story will be utilized by the right, repeated again and again and again, and those images will show up. And no question, in the march, in the resistance to fight Trump, burning the American flag today, if that story holds up and it is true, as reported, did significant damage. It was a terrible, terrible, incredibly stupid, selfish thing to do.
Yeah. I agree with you that the story is too new, and we don't know. And sometimes there are infiltrators. I'm not saying that's what happened. I just don't know. We tried to find out who did it, and there was no details at all. All right, guys, we've got to take a break. When we come back, a very special surprise, making the power panel a little bit more powerful. You're going to love it.